Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 9, Chapters 10 and 11. Chapter 10. The following were the circumstances that hemmed him, that is, Maximin the tyrant, in. He was unable to carry on the vast government with which he had been undeservedly entrusted, but lacking a prudent and imperial mind, he managed his affairs tactlessly. And above all, his soul was uplifted in an absurd manner by an overweening arrogance, actually against his colleagues in the empire, men who were in every way his superiors in birth and upbringing and education, in worth and intelligence, and, what is most important of all, in sobriety and piety towards the true God. So he began to venture to act with insolence and publicly to style himself first in rank. Then he pushed his madness to the length of insanity, and, breaking the treaty he had made with Licinius, raised an internecine war. Next, in a short time, he threw everything into confusion, greatly disturbed every city, and, gathering together all the army, an innumerable multitude of men went forth to fight him in battle array, his soul uplifted by the hopes he placed in demons, whom, forsooth, he regarded as gods, and in his myriads of armed soldiers. But when he joined battle, he found himself bereft of divine providence, for by the direction of him who is the one and only God of all, the victory was given to Licinius, who was then ruling. First of all, the armed soldiers in whom he had trusted were destroyed, and when his bodyguard had left him defenseless and wholly deserted, and had gone over to him who was ruling, the wretched man divested himself with all speed of the imperial insignia, and that ill became him, and in a cowardly, base, and unmanly way, quietly slipped into the crowd. Then he ran about here and there, hiding himself in the fields and villages, and for all his courting of safety, he escaped with difficulty the hands of his enemies, his deeds themselves proclaiming how very trustworthy and true are the divine oracles, in which it has been said, "There is no king saved by much power, and a giant will not be saved by his great strength. A horse is a vain thing for safety, and will not be saved by his great power. Behold, the eyes of the Lord are upon them that fear him, upon them that hope in his mercy, to deliver their souls from death." Thus then did the tyrant, filled with shame, come to his own territory. And first in his mad fury he put to death many priests and prophets of those gods who had formerly been his admiration, and whose oracles had incited him to begin the war, on the ground that they were charlatans and deceivers, and above all betrayers of his safety. Next he gave glory to the Christians' God, and drew up a law on behalf of their liberty in the most complete and fullest manner. Then, straightway, no respite being granted him, he ended his life by a miserable death. Now the law issued by him was as follows. Copy of a translation of the ordinance of the tyrant on behalf of the Christians, made from the Latin tongue into the Greek. The emperor, Caesar, Gaius, Valerius, Maximinus, Germanicus, Sarmaticus, Pius, Felix, Invictus, Augustus. We believe that no one is ignorant, nay, that every man who has recourse to the facts knows and is conscious that it is manifest that in every way we take unceasing thought for the good of our provincials and desire to grant them such things as are best calculated to secure the advantage of all, and whatsoever things are advantageous and useful to their common weal, and such as are suitable to the public advantage and agreeable to every mind. Since, therefore, this it has been evident to our knowledge, that on the plea that the most divine Diocletian and Maximian, our fathers, had given orders for the abolishment of the Christian assemblies, many extortions and robberies have been practiced by the officials, and that this increase as time went on to the detriment of our provincials, for whose good it is our especial desire that there should be due thought, and that their own personal possessions were being destroyed, we addressed a letter to the governors in each province last year, laying it down that if any should wish to follow such a custom or the same religious observances, such a one should adhere to his purpose without hindrance, and be hindered or prevented by no one, and that they should have a free hand without fear and suspicion to do whatsoever each one pleases. But it cannot escape our notice, even now, that some of the judges misinterpreted our injunctions and caused our people to have doubts with regard to our commands, and made them somewhat backward in joining in those religious observances that were pleasing to them. That therefore, for the future, all suspicion or doubt arising from fear may be removed, we have decreed that this ordinance be published, so that it may be plain to all that those who desire to follow this sect and religious observance are permitted in accordance with this our bounty, as each one wishes or finds it pleasing to join in that religious observance which from choice he was wont to practice. And permission has also been granted them to build the Lord's houses. Nevertheless, that our bounty may be even greater, we have decided to decree this also, that if any houses or lands which used formerly to belong by right to the Christians have, by the injunction of our parents, passed into the right of the public treasury, or have been seized by any city, whether a sale of these has taken place or they have been handed over to anyone as a gift, we have given orders that all these be restored to the Christians as their original right, so that in this also all may perceive our piety and solicitude. These are the words of the tyrant that came less than a whole year after the ordinances against the Christians set up by him on tablets. And he, who a short while previously looked upon us as impious and godless and pests of society, so that we were not permitted to dwell in, I will not say, a city, but even a spot in the country or a desert, this same person drew up ordinances and legislation on behalf of Christians and those who shortly before were being destroyed by fire and sword and given to wild beasts and birds for food before his eyes, and were enduring every kind of chastisement and punishment and loss of life in the most pitiable manner, as if they were godless and wicked. These he now allows both to observe their form of worship and to build churches. And the tyrant himself confesses that they possess certain rights. And when he had made these confessions, as if meeting with some kind of reward on this very account, that is, suffering less, to be sure, than it behooved him to suffer, he was smitten all at once by a stroke of God, and perished in the second encounter of the war. But the circumstances of his death were not such as fall to the lot of generals on a campaign, who time after time contend bravely on behalf of virtue and friends, and with a good courage meet the glorious end in battle. But he suffered his due punishment like an impious enemy of God, skulking at home while his army was still stationed in battlefield array on the field. All at once he was smitten by a stroke of God over his whole body, with the result that he fell prone under the onslaught of terrible pains and agonies. He was wasted by hunger, and his flesh entirely consumed by an invisible, divinely sent fire. The form which his body once possessed wasted away and vanished, and there remained only a form of dry bones, like some phantom shape long since reduced to a skeleton, so that those present could not but think that his body had become the tomb of his soul, which had been buried in what was now a corpse and completely wasted away. And as the heat consumed him still more fiercely, in the very depths of his marrow, his eyes projected and falling down from their sockets left him blind. Yet he still breathed in this condition, and making confession to the Lord, invoked death. So with his last breath, he acknowledged that he suffered thus justly because of his violence against Christ, and then gave up the ghost. Chapter 11. When Maximin was thus removed, he, who was the only one left of the enemies of godliness, and showed himself the worst of all, by the grace of Almighty God, the renewal of the churches from the foundation was set on foot, and the word of Christ received a due increase upon its former freedom, and was clearly heard to the glory of God of the universe, while the impiety of the enemies of godliness was covered with the most abject shame and dishonor. For Maximin himself was the first to be proclaimed by the rulers as a common enemy of all, and posted in public edicts on tablets, as a most impious, most hateful, and God-hating tyrant. As to the portraits which were set up in every city to his honor and that of his children, some were hurled from a height to the ground and smashed to pieces. Others had their faces blackened over with dark-colored paint and so rendered useless. The statues likewise, as many as had been set up in his honor, were cast down and broken in the same manner, and lay as an object of merriment and sport to those who wished to insult or abuse them. Next, all the honors of the other enemies of godliness also were taken away, and all who were of the party of Maximin were slain, especially those in high government positions that had been honored by him and who indulged in violent abuse against our doctrine in order to fawn upon him. Such was Poiketius, a man whom he honored and respected above all, the truest of his friends, consul a second and third time, and appointed by him general finance minister. Such likewise was Colchianus, who had gone through every grade of office in the government, the same person who gloried in the murder of countless Christians in Egypt, and in addition to these, not a few others, who were the chief means of confirming and increasing Maximin's tyranny. So it was that Theotechnus also was summoned by justice, who in no wise consigned to oblivion that he did what he did against the Christians. For after he had set up the idol at Antioch, he seemed to be prospering and had actually been deemed worthy of a governorship by Maximin. But when Licinius came to the city of the Antiochenes, he made a search for charlatans and plied with torturers the prophets and priests of the new-made idol to find out by what contrivance they were practicing this deceit. And when the infliction of the torturers made concealment impossible for them, and they revealed that the whole mystery was a deceit manufactured by the art of Theotechnus, he inflicted a just punishment upon them all, putting to death, after a long series of tortures, first Theotechnus himself, and then also the partners in his charlatanery. To all these were added the sons of Maximin, whom he had already caused to share the imperial dignity and to be set up in paintings and pictures. And those who formerly boasted kinship with the tyrant were moved by pride to lord it over all men, underwent the same sufferings, accompanied by the most abject disgrace as those mentioned above. For they received not correction, nor did they know or understand the exhortation in the sacred books which says, "Put not your trust in princes, in the sons of men, in whom there is no help. His breath shall go forth, and he shall return to the earth. In that day all his thoughts shall perish." Thus, verily, when the impious ones had been purged away, the kingdom that belonged to them was preserved steadfast and undisputed for Constantine and Licinius alone, who, when they had made it their very first action to purge the world of enmity against God, conscious of the good things that he had bestowed upon them, displayed their love of virtue and of God, their piety and gratitude towards the deity, by their enactment on behalf of the Christians. Here ends Book 9 and Chapters 10 and 11. And with these chapters, we also bring Book 9 of the Ecclesiastical History to its conclusion. Let's move on to some notes and commentary. These final chapters describe the fall of Maximin, the tyrant of the East and the enemy of the Christians. Chapter 10 notes how Maximin came into conflict with Constantine and Licinius, which resulted in a war between his forces and those of Licinius. In the opening battle, Maximin was defeated, and in an act of unmanly cowardice, divested himself of the imperial insignia and escaped to safety by slipping into the crowd. Attempting to regroup, Maximin issued a decree giving full liberty to the Christians. Eusebius cites a Greek translation of the original of the Latin original of this decree. In it, the tyrant claimed that he had instructed his governors to be lenient with the Christians, but some had misinterpreted and misapplied his instructions. He further ordered that Christians should be free to observe their religion and to build the Lord's houses. He also decreed that any confiscated land or property should be returned to the Christians. Eusebius notes that this order came less than a year after Maximin's ordinances against Christians were set up on tablets. Not long after this, Maximin was smitten by a stroke of God. His body was consumed by what Eusebius calls an invisible, divinely sent fire, till he was reduced to little more than a skeleton. His eyes fell out of his sockets, blinding him, and with his last breath, he acknowledged that this punishment had come upon him justly for his maltreatment of the Christians. Chapter 11 describes the further aftermath with the death of Maximin. Statues of the tyrant were smashed and his portraits were defaced. His high government officials, men who had led the persecution of Christians in order to please Maximin, were executed, including a man named Poiketius and another called Culcianus. And when Licinius came to Antioch, he also discovered and tortured and put to death Theotechnus and his pagan associates. Finally, Maximin's own sons were also put to death. In conclusion, Book 9 ends with the fall of Maximin, the tyrant of the East, the persecutor and enemy of the Christians. His horrific death and the death of those associated with him shows the justice of God. It assures the reader that those who oppress believers will be given retribution in and according to the justice of God. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. Hope this has been helpful to those who are listening, and I will look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Till then, take care and God bless.